Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. To get involved, send email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. Follow TA_weekly on Twitter or call 260-2-ASK-TAW. And this is Tech Access Weekly for February 23rd, 2012. I am Aaron.
I'm Rodney.
And this is Social
Service.
I wanted to get the service to come right at a specific point.
Oh, well, you didn't tell me that in prep.
Oh, well, I didn't think I needed to.
Oh.
Because whenever you try and say the tagline, you try and make it come at that pause point. Exactly.
Well, that's because I'm a professional.
Oh, don't give me that mess. Don't give me that mess. And some people still want to know who we are and what we do for a living and all that jazz. We have received some emails about this recently. I will again point people to episode 74.
Why, yes. Episode 74, you can find a link to it on our website at techaccessweekly.com/about.
It is called Meet the Hosts, and you will get to know us
more than you want to.
More than you want to, with some help from our reporters in the field.
Yes.
You'll get to find out more about us than you probably would want.
And as I told someone earlier today, that I just have to get used to being male talent.
Male
on
talent.
The podcast. I'm just male talent. I'm just here for looks, you know.
How can you be here for looks if no one can see you?
Oh, wait. Okay.
Yeah. We also got some email from David Partrick, who thought it was awesomely cool that we used part of his song last week on our podcast, Unfriending on Facebook. I Unfriended You on Facebook is the song. You can find it in iTunes, all that kind of thing.
Search for Partrick, P-A-R space T-R-I-C-K.
Yeah.
You can get it for 99 cents.
Mm-hmm. Susan Gerard sent us a link, or Gerhardt, I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce it, sent us a link to a story that pointed out that the New York Times and another news publication claimed that a person invented email when in fact all he did was copyright a program called email. Basically, just to point out that oftentimes modern-day paper journalists don't know what to make of the internet.
Yeah, it is kind of a growing epidemic that people do not research anymore. They just post things and then go, whoopsie.
Oh, my bad. Yeah. Thus, my regular weekly bitching sessions on Twitter about how some of these blog entries and tech journals that are supposed to be professional have errors all through them. Blatant typographical and grammatical errors.
Yeah, I think they just get caught up in that, hey, let's get this published as quick as we can. And then, well, I mean, some of them are blatantly obvious, but then some are kind of tricky where it's like a normal word, but it's used improperly.
Mm.
You know, that kind of stuff.
And I maintain, if you want to get people to take you seriously, you should observe proper writing style.
Yep, that's why I'm only here for looks.
Mm-hmm. Well, that may be true. Seeing as how you had trouble with a first word in an article. What was the word again?
Prehistoric.
No?
No.
It was that F word.
F word. Oh, yeah. I was trying to figure out that word. It's FDA, but it's got to be pronounced somehow. So FDA? FDA.
Yeah, more about that later.
Is that close enough? FDA?
That could work. That could work. More about that later on in the podcast. And we have also been told that people like the dings, even though it makes us sound, in my view, a little quirky. But
we got to do something.
We
got to
do something. We got to do something. And we start off in security news.
As usual. Ding.
I just did it.
Well, I need one that's clean. Ah, feel better now. In a story that we talked about a couple weeks ago, Symantec had some code stolen back in 2006, and it was thought that you may be okay if you upgrade to all of the latest versions of the software, and they're even offering some free upgrades to people that hold old licenses. The major one is PC Anywhere.
Yeah, the software was called PC Anywhere. And apparently, some businesses, and including a couple of credit card companies, I seem to recall, are still having problems with this. Some of them have not updated to the latest version. There is a security researcher in Massachusetts, I believe, who has said that even with the latest patches, you may not be secure. So just to keep an eye on that, the PC Anywhere woes just seem to be getting larger.
Yeah, I think the article said that they had had about 5,000 people or systems say that they were impacted by right. this issue. And a good number of those were actually point of sale terminals mm-hmm. that people are using in businesses and restaurants and such. So they will probably have to be upgrading.
Upgrading or switching to a different program, one of the two.
Very true. But those POS systems are pretty archaic in nature as to how they work.
Ah, archaic, are they?
Well, I had to bring the level up from FUTA.
Yeah, speaking of archaic, Google is accusing Microsoft of having archaic and outdated code in there.
Well, this is something because that we did not touch on last week, and this is kind of a side effect of, we say Google's doing it too. Well, Apple has accused Google of bypassing the security in the Safari browser, and you can hear lots going on with the Twit network.
They've covered it. There's been a class action lawsuit instituted in Delaware.
Yeah, the best place to probably get information on this is yesterday's Security Now with Steve Gibson, episode number 341, where they talk about this whole issue and how it's kind of an invasion of privacy and causing you tales of woe, I guess. But Safari is the only browser. Now, this is only on the iPhone and iOS devices. Safari has options where it will say only allow cookies for websites that I've visited. So if you go to a website, you can receive a cookie from them, but if that website has a banner ad or something on the page and it links off to another website, you're not supposed to be able to get that cookie. So it's kind of like if you saw a double click ad or something, you shouldn't be grabbing the cookie for that particular website. So what Google was doing is they were bypassing the setting that comes standard on the Safari browser with Apple, and using sort of a backdoor form method that would actually go and say, hey, yeah, they don't want me to have third-party cookies, but
I'm going to put them in anyway.
Yeah, the person, they're logged into Google, and we want to give them the plus one button so that they can plus one articles and websites that they like. So we're gonna circumvent that. Well, they didn't give any notice to it. They didn't tell the user that they were bypassing it. Well, it turns out that the hack was actually disabling it for more websites than just Google. So they're getting a little bit of a red hand slap because of that. Plus the fact that Apple is trying, I guess, it's kind of a catch-22. Some are saying that Apple is trying to protect the users and keep them safe on their mobile phones, and that all users can go and you can change it and say accept third-party cookies in your settings. But other people are saying that Apple is just trying to keep other sites from making a profit. They only want Apple to make profit off of you.
That's probably a bit of both.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you think about it, every website you go to has a dig button, it has a mm-hmm. Facebook like button, and it has a Google plus one button. So every time those things are clicked, those companies are actually making money, which you're getting free services for what they make. So I'm not sure which way to look at this. The part where Microsoft comes into it, I think it was stated that it was like in 2001 or 2002.
2002, I think.
They have a process called P3P, which is a privacy setting. And I think this must have been like in Internet Explorer 6 or maybe an early version of, it had to be 6, that old ago. But it was code where Microsoft was going to do the same thing that the Safari browser on iOS is doing and say that, no, you can't accept third-party cookies. But they got such flack over putting that code on the PC that they took that code out. Well, they didn't really remove the code, yeah, so Google is able to sort of go around it and use the same type of method.
It hasn't really been proven that Internet Explorer is affected, but Microsoft is saying that it's affected.
Yeah, and it's kind of a point the finger at Google while you can, I guess.
Right.
So, a Stanford researcher, Jonathan Mayer, came up with the problem with the plus one button on the Safari on the iOS devices of Stanford University, and there's a lot of articles and a lot of discussions going on about it. So, if you are worried about it, you can go and turn off third-party cookies and turn off accepting all cookies, but then the problem you run into is you're going to actually break the internet, because websites track you in some fashion.
Track you. Yeah.
If you go to your cookies folder in your browser and look at everything, every site that's got something out there, it's nonstop, because they're tracking sessions and where you've been, and they come back. I mean, how else do you think that they say, "Hi, hey, Sarah, welcome back to our website.
You want to search for things in Atlanta, Georgia? We basically figured that out just because you visited here this one time."
Yeah. We know that. So it's one of those things where it's getting about to the point that Google has to at some point start owning up to these things instead of,
it's a bad piece of code and no one pays attention to it anyway, so we're just going to take advantage of it and hell with it.
And the fact that they're kind of like, well, it's a brand new world out there and things are changing all the time and we have to take what advantages we can. Sorry. You know, so it's sort of, you're either a Google apologist or an Apple apologist or a bandwagon jumper for Microsoft. I'm not sure which.
I don't know.
But in the post for this, I will include the articles to that, along with the Wall Street Journal article that started the whole thing, saying that Google was tracking iOS users by Safari, you know, which was totally wrong. And I'll also include a link to Security Now for yesterday, as well as the This Week in Google number 135 that came out right after that, that also discusses this privacy issue and things.
And if our listeners are asleep now,
wake up! We're going to play some Pokemon!
Wake up!
Okay, now I'm getting a headache.
Yeah, well, that was the point. We've been talking about Android being full of viruses and scam apps and all this kind of thing. Well, iOS had one recently.
We are an equal opportunity insulter.
Exactly.
Or finger pointer, as it were.
There was a scam Pokemon app in the App Store that has since been removed.
Pokemon Yellow came out this past weekend, and it said that it was just like the original. And it only sold for 99 cents. It had screenshots from the game and all this kind of stuff.
Little video clips.
Yeah, and what it turned out to be was an actual scam where you were getting absolutely nothing and they were stealing information from you.
Yeah.
The makers of Pokemon, along with Apple, discovered this after it had been in the market for about 2 days, I believe. It immediately jumped to the purchase history top downloaders, you know, the in-app purchases. So they had to get rid of it.
Well, this is what I don't understand. Mm. Apple claims to sort of supervise these apps, you know. And wouldn't they kind of realize that the app wasn't doing what it's supposed to do unless they don't have testers? Because the app claimed it was the game. Actually, it didn't have the game in it. All it had were video clips and YouTube videos of how to play the game. There was no game in it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they look at it to some extent, but they probably receive so many applications that it's hard to go through at all.
Yeah.
All of the possibilities, you know, I don't know. But if you know someone or you did download the Pokemon Yellow from the last week, you can go into your iTunes purchase history and see if you have any extraneous charges, and you can contact Apple for a refund.
I never understood what Pokemon. What is Pokemon?
Other
than a stupid video game.
It's a cartoon. It's a video game. It's like anime. It's like Japanese characters with big eyes.
Oh, okay.
You know, sort of Raggedy Ann and Andy from back in the day that have big, huge eyes.
Oh, okay.
You know, kind of you see those stuffed animals or something, they got the real huge eyes.
The big
on
eyes.
I don't know.
Okay.
It's something that people like, I guess, and kids like to collect the cards. It's like baseball, but with cartoons. Pokemon. And I think some dude married a pillow of
yes,
it or
he married a pillow
year
with a Pokemon face.
That was evidently something really big, and I think
and
it was
he
Korea.
Took it on a plane with him. No, it was Japan.
Japan?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and then the one guy took one on a date and sat there with food for the pillow.
Yeah, and one guy booked an airline flight for his anime pillow.
And another one actually took it on a roller coaster.
Okay,
we've digressed a little bit more.
Apple is extending its deadline for the sandboxing of apps for the Mac till June 1st.
Instead of March. Because it was making a lot of developers hyperventilate over having issues with their applications.
Mm.
This is where it was basically, they were wanting application developers to build sort of a sandbox around it to sort of prevent applications from having more access than they need to. So we do have an article about that if you are more interested.
There was also a lawsuit going on about the AntennaGate, AT&T AntennaGate scare when the iPhone 4 came out. We talked about this extensively, the fact that people were getting dropped calls and Apple claimed it was an oopsie on their part, designing the outward antenna on the iPhone in such a way that it could cause this to happen. So, of course, there was the class action lawsuit, and this was finally settled.
Yeah, this dates back to 2010.
Yeah, this was a long time ago. Apple will be giving people who qualify, and there are about, what did they say, 15 million people?
25 million.
Okay.
They are either going to give them
a $15 refund.
Refund, which means that they would be paying out $375 million, or they will offer them a free bumper. Yet again. And the way that you qualify for this is that you had to have complained about having cell service issues with the iPhone 4 back in June and July of 2010 when it came out. And you also had to refuse receiving the free bumper through the program that they offered for about 2 or 3 months back then.
And just to clarify for people who may not be certain, complaining does not mean telling your family, oh crap, my cell phone reception is terrible.
You have to have
complained to Apple.
So, but apparently they estimate that around 25 million folks do qualify for this, and that would, like I say, be a payout of $375 million, which this week, I believe it was, Apple actually announced that they have more money than they could ever possibly need.
And one last Apple-ish kind of story before it's sort of Apple-ish. I think this is coming to Android soon, too.
Ah.
It hasn't even come out for Apple yet, so thus Apple-ish. An iOS app called Braille Touch, which is being developed by researchers and students at Georgia Tech University, people are claiming that this is going to have appeal not only for the blind, but also for the sighted. The deal with this app is you're supposed to be able to touch type in Braille on the iPhone. And people are all excited about it because they're claiming that it's going to be faster than actually typing, you know, on the layered keyboard that the iPhone has. But in reality, it may be faster. However, are sighted people going to want to learn a whole new method, a whole new code of finger placements in order to type?
It's supposed to give the 6 positions for the Braille on the screen, and then you can touch without it. I think there is also technology to do a tablet interface like this for the iPad. We've mentioned that before.
But the article that I was reading was trying to claim that sighted people are going to find this wonderfully awesome, and I'm just not seeing it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess with all of the laws saying that you can't drive and text, and that you have to watch where you're walking and things, maybe the public would like it.
Are you going to want to learn a whole new code?
How hard could it be? You do it.
Yeah, I know, but it's not something that you can read. You're going to see these little dots and you're going to say, okay, typing along, do two dots for this, two dots for this. Why are these two dots that and not the other thing?
I
just don't see people wanting to take the trouble to learn it in the long run.
I guess the idea is that it should be simple. And in order to type, you only have to hit six buttons, which means there's less chance for you mistyping like there is on the little tiny letters on the keyboard. I don't know whether that would be actually something that a person would use.
I doubt it.
I mean, there are apps that actually use the camera so that you can walk and the camera actually shows you on the screen what you're walking towards.
Yeah.
So that you can see it, but you're still able to type your message and you're still able to read your message, but you're still able to look at the sidewalk in front of you.
But
I downloaded one of those. Yeah. It was strange.
Weird. Anyway, we'll see. The app hasn't even come out yet, so this is kind of pointless to debate this at the moment.
But maybe it would bring a more idealistic view to learning Braille.
I don't know.
Encourage all of the Braille readers out there who are abandoning it to...
learn it again.
Yeah.
Take it up.
Since it's decreasing on the blind
folks. Yeah, I think actually for blind people this would be really good, but I'm not seeing where sighted people will get a big thrill out of it.
I don't know. As fast as teenagers pick up things, they might be all over that because
maybe
they'd be able to text during school.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, they'd be able to sit there with it in their pocket.
That's true.
I think we need a ding.
We do indeed. Supernova has released two updates for their Dolphin products, one for Dolphin Guide and one for Dolphin Screen Reader and Magnifier version 12.
Guide 6.029 is now available.
It is now available. There are some fixes with Facebook, some other social networking sites, and some fixes for Internet Explorer and mouse emulation functions have also been fixed. We have a link to the new features in this version in the show notes. And likewise, a link to the new features in Dolphin 12 Magnifier and Screen Reader.
Yes, Dolphin 12.07.
Yes.
And if you are a customer that has version 12, you will get this upgrade free.
It is for free. There are some improvements to the way in which it works with Microsoft Office. I think Windows Live Mail, some other email clients have gotten some fixes. And this goes for Dolphin Guide as well. Some of the voices were not working correctly, like the vocalizer voices and the acapella voices would crash occasionally the program. And mm-hmm. This has fixed that bug too.
Ah, everything has to crash.
I know. But for a full list of bug fixes related by their number even, see the show notes for the 12.07 fixes. GW Micro has likewise released an update for the firmware of the GW Micro Read It Wand. This was that scanning thing that sort of looked like the Pearl or the HoverCam that DocuScan uses.
Yes.
Now, this Read It Wand update consisted of some improvements, I think, to the voices and additional voices you can get. I think some more languages, improvements in column rendition for tables.
The ability to rotate the screen. It has ZoomText 10 split screen support.
Yes.
Different things like that. Documents list is now available for recent
documents. And if you want to, and there's also an online activation addition as well.
Ah. So maybe
you can
activate
online.
So maybe you don't have to have a key number.
And there's also a new thing that has been implemented. If you're running the demo versions, it will tell you how many days you have left on your demo.
Yeah, and I still have not received at work, going back to the story from last week, my activation purchase code for ZoomText 10 that I'm supposed to get. So I only have 54 days, now 53 days of 60-day trial remaining.
Yeah, and I unfortunately only have laziness to blame for this. I had a Kurzweil installed on my computer for work and had forgotten to register it because I always have trouble doing it in Windows 7.
Whoopsie.
And I always have to call and ask them every single frickin' time. And it's something so simple that I keep forgetting to do. I keep forgetting to run it as an administrator. That's it. And I actually waited until the last day of the demo period and then said, oh, crap, I need to register this. I forgot. But then it was pretty easy, and I can't believe I have to call every frickin' time. But anyway, we digress.
Maybe next time you have to call and reinstall that, you could record it and do one of the daily tips on it and just record the call so that you can refer back to that.
Oh, my God. It made me feel so stupid. I was like, oh, you're kidding. That's all I need to do. And I think I heard a couple of people that I work with kind of turned around to me like, what?
Yeah, a lot of times when you are installing software, especially with accessibility type things, it does assist if you run the executable as administrator. So you can do like the right click control on whatever it is you're installing.
Right.
I will point out that the article that we have on the GW Micro has download links and reference materials as well.
Like the Dolphin articles also have the same thing. The Humanware Stream, Victor Reader Stream has been updated to, excuse me, version 3.4, I believe, 0.6. And the Humanware Companion has also been updated. You can get to those links from the Humanware website, humanware.com. And the Stream itself, there are a couple of new features and enhancements. If you don't have the soft pack, there are some enhancements to navigation of DAISY titles, and also some enhancements with time jumps in certain types of files, and also some enhancements to the way it handles certain special characters in the music folder, accented characters and things. It was reading those and crashing the system when it would encounter certain things.
Uh-huh.
And better navigation and more responsiveness when navigating through recorded notes. The Humanware Companion is also a lot faster in recognizing things in a directory. I have a directory of books that has over 900 different files in it, and every time I would open the Humanware Companion, it took like a minute and 30 seconds to index the directory, and now it does it almost immediately.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was taking a long time.
Yikes.
So, Zoom Text.
You are a little book hoarder, I swear.
The latest version of Zoom Text 10 is certified to work with the SAP NetWeaver programs.
Yeah, I guess this is the financial type software that's kind of like PeopleSoft.
Ah.
NetWeaver is a way for large enterprises that use SAP to make their applications more accessible and to a wide range of people. And gives them the ability to adopt new processes, as the website says, with ease. I will include a link to the SAP NetWeaver description so that you can actually read about that if you are curious. And a lot of times corporations are worried about accessibility and want to claim that software isn't accessible. So maybe this is a good step in the right direction.
The FUDA, otherwise known as the Food and Drug Administration, has approved a preservative-free drug to treat certain types of glaucoma.
But it's free.
It is not free. It is preservative-free.
Oh.
It is about $97 for a 30-day supply, sans insurance coverage. So, kind of a hefty price tag there. It is going to be, it's produced by Merck, and it will be administered in a drop form. It has not, I don't know if people have started to use it on a regular basis yet.
It's called
Xylotan?
Zioptan.
Zioptan. I could never say it. Zioptan. So we'll see what happens.
Yes. One of the types that it works with is open angle glaucoma and ocular hypertension.
Yeah, open-angle glaucoma is one of the most prevalent forms of glaucoma, and ocular-related hypertension is generally related to age, as people age.
Mm.
Open-angle glaucoma can be linked to a variety of various eye conditions, like retinopathy, prematurity, or, other visual conditions.
Yes. But it is not free.
No, not
even
free.
Even though the title says free.
Preservative-free. Yes.
So, this glaucoma medication comes with no MSG, I guess we would say.
Yeah, MSG. Okay.
You know, like the Chinese food. You'll yeah. go to a Chinese restaurant and it'll be, would you like this MSG free?
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, you said the same. You said the same thing about magnesium last year, as I recall correctly.
Magnesium.
There was some kind of drug that wasn't going to have, or some kind of thing that wasn't going to have manganese. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And I said manganese free, and you said MSG free. We had the same exact discussion.
Huh?
You never let anything go.
That's obvious because you're still here.
Improved Daisy Pipeline has been improved. Version 1.1 is out. This is an automated tool to author Daisy documents. So, in other words, there's like an API that does the authoring so that people don't have to sit there and do all the tagging manually. Version 1.1 has been released. Improvements to the API, improvements to the command line structure. If you want a full list of features, because quite frankly, I don't use it and they don't mean a lot to me, we do have a link in our show notes to the Daisy Consortium blog entry about this. Now your tongue can secretly operate a computer. This is kind of freaky.
And a computerized wheelchair as well.
Yeah, well, people with a lot of spinal cord injuries, they could operate wheelchairs, but they would have to use a series of air compressions, kind of like blows and puffs in specific sequences, mm-hmm. in order to do that. And this new gadget, still in the development stages, but it could do the same thing, and you would not be as obvious. Essentially what it is, if you don't mind getting your tongue pierced, a little bitty retainer that you would wear in your mouth that has a magnet on it, and it would be connected to a smartphone-like device that could help power your wheelchair and would also allow you to control your laptop or smartphone.
All right.
With various tongue movements.
Huh.
It would respond to, I believe, 7 different movements to manipulate your devices. So,
That's
we'll
kind
see
of a handy
that.
New tech.
Yeah, I think that's kind of neat.
A little bit better than the device we had talked about last year where it was actually like the kissing device where you could be kissing the machine and
yes.
the person on the other end of the machine would be able to get the same sensation or whatever.
That's just disgusting.
Which they referenced in the Big Bang Theory at one point.
Yes, I do believe they did. A couple last accessibility conferences to talk about. CSUN, the 27th...
I see the sun, but it's nighttime.
Annual International Technology and Persons with Disabilities Conference at the University of California at Northridge. I have to read that every time we do a TA Weekly and we talk about CSUN. I have to read the name of that stupid conference every single
technology
time.
Technology and Persons with
Disabilities conference will be held from February 27th to March 3rd.
If you read slow, you'd never get out of the airport.
I know.
You'd have to get right back on your flight.
Yeah. At the Manchester Hyatt Hotel in San Diego. And you can follow the hashtag CSUN12 on Twitter for all sorts of cool updates. I will mention that Sarah Talk is doing an On the Road to CSUN, similar to, I guess, what the Microsoft folks are doing. Microsoft has got their accessibility blog folks going around the country to sort of tout their new products at various independent living agencies and other related organizations throughout the country. Sarah Talk is doing the same thing, although I think what they're doing is a bit different. They want to see how assistive technology impacts people around the country. So you can go to SAMNet Radio, where you can get to through SAMNet or on the iBlink radio app, and go to the live stream of the Sarah Talk Road to CSUN. And the Microsoft Accessibility blog also has a blog called the same thing, but with different people.
Oh, okay. So the Sarah, I hadn't listened to one of the Sarah Talk things. I saw one of the posts today about it, and I hadn't had time to listen to it.
I think they're different. I believe it's Mike Calvo doing the Sarah Talk, and it's the Microsoft guys doing the Microsoft one.
Okay. I didn't know if they took Joe Steinkamp and put him out on the side of the road with a bottle of ranch dressing and some potato skins and tried to see how far he could get.
Ranch dressing and potato skins.
You know, since we know that he loves ranch dressing.
Yeah, it's his favorite.
Yeah.
Favorite.
I still think he needs to change his Twitter name from Ranger Station to Ranch Dressing.
That would be good.
Ranch Station.
Ranch Station.
Yeah.
There you go. Perfect. And so,
I believe we could use a ding.
Do we want a ding or do we want music?
Yeah, go with a ding first. Now, for $250,000,
you can buy a lab-grown hamburger.
A test tube burger.
Coming later in 2012, $250,000 a pop. These pieces of meat are grown using adult stem cells from the fabled bovine creatures. And the cells are generally rather weak. And so in order to get them to be held together, they have to stimulate them with electric shocks. This is so weird and kind of creepy. And I don't think I want it. It'd be interesting to know if it tastes the same, though. But you'll be able to find out at the end of the year, probably, for 250,000 smackaroos.
So how would the Chick-fil-A commercials actually dispute this if there's not beef being eaten?
It's beef. It's just
yeah. If it's not
human,
if it's not animals being used for the meat, you know.
I don't know.
You know, because the Chick-fil-A commercials here in the U.S., it's basically a chicken restaurant, and the cows go around saying "eat more chicken" because they don't want people to make burgers and steaks and things. So what would they do if everything was developed in the lab?
I don't know. But
I'm not letting things go again, right?
Yeah. Just stop right there.
Okay. What were you thinking? You skipped an article.
No, I didn't. A federal judge in Louisiana is trying to maintain that a law prohibiting sex offenders from using social networking sites is entirely too broad and should be stripped from the books. This judge essentially stated that sex offenders, especially those convicted of offenses against minors and voyeurism, he kind of was trying to set some limits on a law in Louisiana that would not allow such people to do pretty much any social networking at all. And this judge maintained that the internet is a vast and sprawling empire, and you can hardly do anything without going to a website that has social networking aspects to it. Even going somewhere that has Google plus one buttons and dig buttons anywhere, it's very difficult. So he maintains that this law should be either rewritten or scrapped entirely.
Why don't they just do like they do for hacking people and just ban the individual from using computers at all?
Well, I don't know.
That's a good question. When Kevin Mitnick was convicted for hacking and went to jail and everything, he got out, and I believe he had to be off of computers, no way to access them for like 10 years.
How do you keep people from going to the library or something? This is what I want to know.
I do not know.
I mean,
I guess you have to be on sort of the honor system, but you may be monitored.
People are watching.
I don't know. Same with these like sex offenders. How do they keep them from accessing like Facebook and stuff at the library?
I don't know, but the only website that actually is a social website that responded to questions about this was Facebook. And Facebook actually said in their terms of service, they state that that is against their terms of service if you are a sex offender to use their website.
Yeah, they do.
To sort of give them a little bit of a pass, I guess, have a problem with a minor and adult.
And even more, what were you thinking, Facebook story, at least in my book, in the UK, a judge has ruled that it is perfectly hunky-dory and okay to tell someone that they've got to go to court by using Facebook.
Do what?
Yeah, he's saying that if you want to tell someone that they have to go to court and they need to be in court on a certain date, in other words, you want to serve them with court papers, you can tell them on Facebook and it's perfectly fine.
Yeah, out in public. Even.
In public.
Not sending them a direct message or
just
anything.
Just post it up on their wall. Just slap it up there. That's perfectly okay.
I mean, that would seem like that would be a little slanderous.
Yeah, it seems like it would be, or at least, wrong.
The immediate things that come to mind is that there's a lot of people on Facebook a lot of people have the same names. Mm-hmm. How do you know you've got the right person to do that?
Exactly.
How are you actually going to get that person to actually friend you? Granted, mm-hmm. most people have their Facebook accounts wide open because they don't know how to tweak their privacy settings. And then if it's posted on your wall, then you're going to have friends and family ridiculing you and making bad jokes and things like that about you and what a ridiculous person you are because you got to go to court.
How is this okay? I do not understand it, and I know the American legal system probably wouldn't have anything to do with it either.
I mean, it'll probably come to this point at some point.
It's going to come. It's going to come. I just, here in the U.S., the way it generally works is that you either are mailed something through certified mail, which means you have to sign for it, or someone gives it to you personally, the piece of paper, or if no one can find you and they've tried everything that they can, notices are put in the newspaper. But it's a very specialized kind of newspaper. It's not like the Raleigh News and Observer.
It's the Enquirer.
No,
that was Lindsay Lohan.
That was Lindsay Lohan. They're like legal advertising circulars.
Oh.
Yeah, it's very
I'm really going to notice that one.
Well, it's a last-ditch effort, and often not successful, and it costs a whole bunch of money.
Well, is it true that the person that is serving you actually has to physically put it in your hand or touch you with it?
No.
Okay, because on television, sometimes you'll see somebody being served, and they'll see the guy and, I'm serving you with this. And he's mm-hmm. like, no, you can't. And he takes off running or whatever because you had to supposedly physically touch them.
No.
Maybe that was just 80s sitcoms or something.
It must be 80s sitcoms. You can put it in there, you know, send them a certified thing that it's at the post office, you know, so they sign for it and they have a receipt. You can put it on their door. You can give it to someone who lives there, an adult who lives there and says, I know him, but he's not here, you know. You basically send it to their last known address or give it to them. You don't have to touch them with it or necessarily hand it to them.
Okay.
So,
I don't know. I think the Facebook thing is just...
It's going to come. It will come. And it will be debated.
Now, I could see this actually working if Facebook would actually do like they're doing for celebrities and literally identify everybody and allow them to say, hey, I certify that I am me.
Yes.
And put a little checkbox on the page, you know, mm-hmm. which they don't even do for... celebrities, you know, which we talked about last week.
Yeah.
But anyway, story number three.
Story number three. Oh, in the Vietnamese airline, a guy was sitting next to a woman with a screaming child. And apparently during the whole flight, the child did nothing but scream. So when they landed,
she asked the guy that was sitting beside her for some help or something. And he did the only thing his mental mind could actually come up with, and he pulled the emergency exit parachute chute, the little
the
pop the door
thing,
open and
the
slide,
poofy thing that
the
comes
slide
out. Yeah, oh gosh,
you know, I mean, granted that stewardess or steward or whatever you wanted to call him, the guy in New Jersey that escaped the plane got pissed off or something and pulled the chute and took two beers and slid down it last year.
Oh, God.
Sort of made the news or whatever, but I guess it's kind of in that range. But the weird thing is that the article says that they have had three other occurrences of this same thing in the last 3 months.
Same airline?
Yes.
Same person?
No.
Okay.
Different people, but same instance of pulling the emergency.
Huh. So weird. I don't know.
Crazy Vietnamese people.
But at least the plane was actually landed.
At least there is that.
Yes.
Yes. Because that was my first thought when I read it. I'm like, he pulled the emergency thing. Was it still in the air or something? And then I read it and was like, oh, well, at least it's
been... it was after they had landed.
Yeah. Well, you never know. I mean, if children scream for long enough, you get a little bit rattled.
And this great gesture went unused because no one actually slid down the slide.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
All right.
Bizarre.
This chaos you have been listening to is Tech Access Weekly, episode...
128.
You can get links to the stories that we considered for this episode and those we covered by going to delicious.com/techaccess/128.
If you would like to check out the Melting Pot Show on Mushroom FM, you can
do
so
from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Sundays.
Hey, you're not supposed to skip in here?
Yes, I am, because it's my show and I can do what I want.
I know, but that's my rehearsed thing.
And if you also would like to check out the Melting Pot Archive, you can either get the most recent podcast on Mushroom FM, or if you are weeks and weeks behind and want to catch up, God knows why you would. But if you do, you can catch it all the way from show number one by going to techaccessweekly.com.
And there is actually
on the Melting Pot Archive.
Yeah,
link.
There is a Melting Pot Archive link. Yes, I'm not sure if that shows every single episode, but you can get a large portion.
I thought all of them were up there.
Well, they're all on archive.org, and you can find
you
them
the
that
feed.
Way. But the feed, I think, only goes to like 30 or something.
30 back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But.
Okay.
I mean, you can literally find the actual post where it was put on the website.
If you really want.
If you want to search.
If you want to search for it. We have them up there for
So I think if you probably. If you went to our website and went to the Google search box on the website and did Melting Pot show number one, you would find show number one in its all wonderful glory.
You really think people are going to do this?
I don't know. I'd love for people that are actually listening to this to do that and then give a critique of how bad she is.
It's horrible.
I mean, how great she was at the start
it was
and how
horrible.
Her decline has happened.
No.
I said that wrong again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're gonna go because it's really time to eat dinner.
Why? Well, I can't go anywhere until you start the music.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Aaron Edgar.
And you can follow me, Rodney Edgar.
And with that, we'll just simply say
bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank God.